I'm Daniel Vitalis of DanielVitalis.com, and you are listening to the Rewild Yourself podcast, a show dedicated to transcending human domestication, activating our invincible genetic health, and uncovering our true potential. In each episode, we explore the many aspects of the rewilding lifestyle for better health, fitness, and a more rich and fulfilling life. Rewild yourself. Engage your biology. Rewild Yourself is brought to you by SirThrival.com. SirThrival is a leading nutritional supplement and metafoods company that supplies essential formulas and ingredients for the rewilding lifestyle. Go to SirThrival.com to find a line of products that promote vigorous health, adaptation, and recovery, and help to unlock our epigenetic potential. SirThrival, why just survive when you could thrive? Hey, welcome back to the Rewild Yourself podcast. Special thanks to everybody who's headed over to iTunes recently and left a review on the show. I really appreciate that. Thanks for hearing that call and doing that. Really appreciate it. If you haven't done that yet, it means a lot to me if you'd go over there and just leave a review about your experience with the show. Okay, so really hoping that you'll consider coming out to Rhinebeck, New York this October, the 11th through the 16th, for my e-school program or elementary school. That's going to be a really awesome five-day program where we're going to help you develop your own distinctive, individual, personal rewilding strategy. So, helping you determine kind of how you'll set up your life now so that you're incorporating all the important factors for a kind of holistic health approach, but also so you can develop that strategy out over the future, because obviously we all grow and we change and we learn new things and we want to incorporate new things. So, I'm going to be passing on a lot of my personal health practices and strategies, as well as a lot of movement and fitness strategies, but they're not going to be the kind of thing where it's like, hey, here, this, do this now. This is your new thing. It's going to be more like, here's what I'm doing, here's the category, and you can plug in different stuff as you learn new things. But I will be giving you quite a few practices. In fact, we'll be focusing on 7 practices in particular. So we'll be looking at your movement practice. We'll be looking at your sleep practice. We'll be looking at your meditation practice. We'll be looking at your food, your water, your air, and of course your interaction with sunlight and in, you know, as a subcategory of that, electronic devices. So we're going to be looking at how we can optimize our health, create healthy habitat around us, and make sure we stay mobile and fit and we're well rested throughout the course of our lives. And by the way, look, I'm a party animal, so don't expect this to be some kind of Quaker event. We're going to be no offense to any Quakers who aren't listening right now. We're going to be looking at how we can maximize our fun and excitement in this life too, because sometimes I think the health thing can be a little bit oppressive to our spontaneity. So I've really focused on how I can keep those 7 practices going and still live a really fun, exciting, dynamic, and always changing lifestyle. And I think that's easy for you to set up too. So consider joining me there. Head over to DanielVitalis.com. Check out the coming events page, and you'll see the details about that event at the Omega Wellness Center this October 2015. Okay, today's show, really cool one. We've got Ryan Ford, who is really leading the charge on training people throughout the United States in parkour and free running. And this is a really exciting kind of movement modality that's emerged. Right now, we're at a phase where it's kind of considered its own unique, I don't know if I would sports the right thing, maybe practice. But a little bit of what Ryan and I are talking about is the idea that parkour isn't actually necessarily this new movement practice, but it's actually how the human body moves. Most of us, and a lot of people have said to me before, you know, I remember when I did MoveNat with Erwin LaCour and Vic Verdier, two amazing guys who are traveling around the world teaching people to move again. And a lot of people saying to me, oh, why would you need to do that? If movement's natural, why do you need to go train in it? And it's because, well, you know, I was corralled into chairs and corralled into couches and spent, you know, most of my life wearing shoes and tight pants and, you know, being restricted and being told not to play, essentially. And a lot of us forgot how to move and we forgot how to ambulate properly and how to climb and how to, you know, when I was a kid, I remember climbing trees was one of my favorite pursuits. It was one of my favorite pursuits. And I don't know what happened. It just sort of tapered off as the responsibilities of, you know, as the responsibilities of life just kind of poured in over the years.
So a lot of us need to be encouraged to move again, and it's helpful to get together with other people who are moving, and that's one of the really cool things about parkour and parkour schools and parkour gyms and all this stuff. So anyway, I think you're going to really enjoy this interview with Ryan, and I encourage you to see if you can get out to one of his trainings or visit one of his 5 parkour schools in the United States, especially if you're in Colorado or California. He's also going to detail the online program which they're developing, and then there's lots of other parkour schools around the country as well. Urban Movement comes to mind out in Houston, but there's many others as well. I mean, they're emerging all over the place, and so I want to encourage you to get in there, learn how to have a good relationship with the ground, learn how to roll, learn how to fall, learn how to climb, learn how to jump. In ways that are efficient. You know, a lot of us know how to do that now, but if somebody actually records you, and this is a great practice, by the way, especially now that a lot of our mobile phones have a slow motion camera, if you get somebody to record you doing some of these movements, you'll see that there's lots of inefficiencies and extraneous movements that are happening. And so it's great to train with somebody who can help you to clean that up a little bit so that your movement's more efficient. Okay, so that's a big long intro to Ryan Ford, amazing guy, really excited to connect with him, and I think you'll be hearing more from him because I'm going to be hopefully getting together with him in person, do some training with him, and I'll be detailing that for you in the future.
Since starting parkour in 2004, Ryan Ford has been internationally recognized as a top parkour athlete and coach. He has performed around the world for organizations such as the U.S. Embassy, Cisco, Nokia, HP, BET, and K-Swiss. Ryan has also been featured in many media outlets such as The New Yorker, Time, and ESPN. Ryan founded Apex Movement, the world's largest parkour gym network, and Parkour EDU, an online education platform. He's also has a celebrated parkour training video series on YouTube called Demon Drills. Hey, Ryan, thanks for coming on, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk here.
Yeah, me too, man. This whole idea of parkour is so exciting to me, but it's also a little daunting and intimidating to me too. So I'm kind of hoping today we can kind of dispel some of the, I guess, the glam around the whole idea so that regular people like myself feel like this thing is accessible. I just got done watching you on a TED Talk, a TEDx Talk, and I felt like after seeing that, like, wow, okay, it felt like really down to earth to me. How'd that come together and how was it being on that TEDx?
Yeah, that was a huge thing for me. Definitely really excited about that. I had been doing a lot of interviews and public speaking, coaching and stuff over the years. And so I was pretty confident with myself and all of that kind of stuff. But when it came to doing TEDx, for the first time in a while, I kind of had those jitters again because I was up in front of, you know, thousands of kids and parents and teachers at this beautiful opera house in downtown Denver, Colorado. But we had been setting that up over a couple of months. The guys there kind of helped me curate a nice talk about, you know, that is one of my main goals is I am pretty good at parkour, but I'm not the best. And I see the value in parkour for everyone. And so that's kind of like my main message, I guess, within the world of parkour, and spreading it to the other people, you know, who don't do it, and making it so that they realize that it's for anyone, not just, you know, the most amazing athletes out there.
Do you think that parkour as, well, actually, you know what, before I say that, let's start off, tell us a little bit about parkour. Give us the sort of, you know, the abbreviated version. What's the story? What's parkour? How'd you get involved with it? You know, where did it come from and where is it headed?
Yeah, so I'll give you the accelerated version here. Parkour, it originated in France, and it has its roots kind of tied into the natural method, which is also kind of an inspiration to MoveNat, so similarities there, as well as parkour also has some roots in the French military training during the Vietnam War. So between those couple things, in the, I believe, mid-1980s is when some of the first guys started to kind of train this parkour type of movement in the urban setting, specifically the suburbs of Paris, France. And these were just a bunch of kind of teenagers at the time, childhood games slowly turned into a more serious practice. And then they started to give it a name. And, you know, eventually over the years, we came up with parkour and it started to spread out of France into the UK, the rest of Europe, and then a little bit after that into the USA and the rest of the world. So Parkour is an art of movement in which we're training our body and mind to overcome obstacles efficiently. And there's another thing that's pretty related, free running. Some people use it as a synonym for parkour, but some people like to distinguish the difference in the sense that parkour is about efficiency and speed. So how would I get from here to there as quickly and as efficiently as possible? Also more relevant in like an emergency situation. Free running is a little bit different. It allows for the aesthetics, the creativity, the stuff that's purely for difficulty or fun. So that's where you would see some of the flips and spins and tricks like that.
Okay, so parkour is more like I get on a bike to go from A to B, and free running is a little more like I get on a BMX to do some stunts.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I guess, you know, the first question I was originally going to ask was how you view parkour now, right? So you've been doing it since 2004, is that right?
Yep, right around there.
All right, so you've been doing it for like 11 years, going on 12 years probably. Now, at this point in your life, I'm just kind of curious how you view it, and do you think, and I guess the reason I'm interested in talking to you about it today, I guess my selfish reason, is that I see this as a kind of, it's human beings finding a natural movement pattern again. Do you see that too, or do you think there's another way of seeing it?
Yeah, honestly, I would say that's like pretty much the most important thing about parkour is it is returning people to their natural movement, their roots. This is the stuff that every little kid did. This is the stuff that we had to do to survive. Like I said, it has a lot of original inspiration from Georges Hébert's natural method, which was a kind of a system of training using all natural movements like running, jumping, climbing, lifting, throwing. And he observed all of these people in, the Caribbean and Africa. And these were kind of, you know, third world communities at the time. They didn't have a lot of the modern technology. And he noted that they were extremely capable and fit despite having no actual fitness regimen. And so he kind of came up with the method or the natural method. And then that later got into the schools in France and also influenced even modern playgrounds. And, you know, those parkour fitness trails that you see a little bit around the USA. So, yeah, it's has its roots in the natural movement. And, you know, that's really what it's all about, just getting people to run and jump and climb and swing and hang and crawl and all of these things, which is what we were meant to do and what we need to do to stay healthy.
Yeah, so it's interesting. So we do that as a child, and then as we get progressively more tamed and domesticated, we kind of lose those movements. And I've noticed a similar thing with, it's like, you know, when you get a dog and the puppy, and the puppy's so active, but if the person who owns that dog is really sedentary, over time that dog will kind of stop being interested in movement so much, or it'll get used to just kind of laying around. And I feel like that's what happens to people. So, you know, I heard you talking about, hey, this is the stuff you did when you were a kid. But it's not like that we just inherently lose that. It's that we stop doing it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, at some point it just kind of becomes not cool, I guess, to climb on the playground and climb a tree and jump off a bench. I mean, some people might stick with it, but I guess a lot of, you know, teenagers, they graduate to their video games and their team sports or their traditional, you know, school sort of stuff. And we stop doing that. And then that's when you see people start to get really unhealthy. Their feet start to get worse because they've been in shoes for so long and they haven't been using it correctly. They start to lose that ability to like even do a pull-up and basic push-ups. And, you know, it's really kind of sad that there are humans that can't do these things that should be considered extremely basic and easy for us to do.
Yeah, it makes me think of, I sometimes will see people who have pet birds, and I think about how what makes a bird so beautiful is the fact that it can, I think what makes birds wonderful and beautiful is that they can fly. And then so it's like, oh, so we put them in a cage where they can't fly. And it's like, well, that kind of takes away their beauty. And then
right. What's
so amazing about us, right? We're apes. We have this incredible range of motion and this ability to move through environments with brachiation and with this bipedalism, and that we lose that. Right. So sad. But at the same time, I mean, I'm sure you grew up like me with people telling you to stop horsing around and stop climbing on that and stop playing on that. When you were a kid, do you remember like being, were you particularly interested in this kind of thing as a kid, or did this develop later for
you? Yeah. So I grew up in the foothills right outside of Denver, Colorado, and I was lucky enough to walk like about a half mile to school and back every day, kind of through the forest. And, you know, there's tons of hiking trails and stuff right outside my yard. So I was always like kind of climbing and jumping around. With that said, I kind of stuck to all the team sports as a kid for whatever reason. I was mostly into soccer, basketball, baseball, football, track and field, all that kind of stuff. And so it wasn't until high school, the end of high school, when I found parkour, and it just kind of blew my mind. But one thing that I wanted to mention while you were kind of talking there about that idea of we lose all this movement capacity when we're kind of domesticated or put in a cage, so to speak. It's actually a little bit more than that. It's not just the physical ability that we lose, but we're also being conditioned, you know, mentally and psychologically mm-hmm. to not do all this stuff. And I read an article the other day, it's kind of like a viral article on the internet. It was about a mom writing a letter to all the parents who want to help her kids on the playground, or who are like watching out for her kids on the playground, when she in fact knows that the kids need to do a little bit of self-discovery and exploration and, you know, fall down and hurt themselves a little bit to learn these important life lessons that'll, you know, make you overcome obstacles physically but also mentally. And that's just one of my huge pet peeves. Like, I constantly see parents, you know, just out at the mall or wherever it might be, and their little kid starts climbing up onto a wall or a bench, and they get mad and they're like, get down, you're going to crack your head, you're going to hurt yourself. And it's like, well, first off, a kid is like, they're pretty much made out of rubber, all right?
Yeah, they're collagen.
I've seen kids take gnarly falls and they're totally fine.
They bounce.
Second off, they're probably not going to hurt themselves that bad. And third off, if they do, you know, a little bit of a hurt, even a broken arm can be a valuable life lesson. So,
yeah, you know, that's really interesting you say that. It brings something up for me. I was recently in a combatives workshop, kind of a fighting thing, and we were having to fight inside of a car as one exercise. And the teacher kept saying to us, he was like, you know, one of these rounds, somebody's going to figure it out. And we didn't know what that meant. He kept saying, somebody's going to figure it out, somebody's going to figure it out. And what it ended up being was that, hey, if you're in a fight in a car, you can use your feet on the dashboard and the roof of the car and on the A pillar and the B pillar, and you don't have to sit in the seats.
Yeah,
and it took us a long time to figure that out because we're so conditioned mentally to see the car as only one way to be in it. And I'm kind of curious your feedback on that as well, because I notice a lot of times people go into gyms, or a lot of times people like getting really bored in their fitness routine when they live in a place where there's amazing areas to train all around them, maybe in their backyard. Like, I have friends with amazing boulders all through their backyard, but they've never even played on them, you know, and you show up at their house and you're looking at it and you're like, oh my gosh, like what an awesome spot. And they've never seen it like that because of their conditioning. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah, exactly. We kind of call it the parkour vision. So as you get more experienced in parkour, you develop this vision where you see everything kind of in a different way. I do get that question a lot from kind of newer practitioners or people who want to get into parkour. They say, hey, I really want to do this. It looks awesome, but I live out in like on a farm in the middle of nowhere and we don't have anything to train on. And, you know, even I've seen some amazing parkour videos in a barn full of haystacks out in the middle of like Russia, doing like crazy flips and stuff into those. And, you know, you just have to get creative. Like, you can do a lot with a simple tree branch or, you know, a picnic table, a bench, even just a stack of rocks or something. It's just a matter of your parkour vision, your creativity. And this is something that little kids have naturally. Like, you set a little kid in front of a pile of rocks or a bench, like, they're going to figure out something to do with it. So why can't adults? And, you know, this whole idea reminds me of something that just happened to me a couple days ago. I had just gone out to get some food or something, and I drove back to my gym, parked in the parking lot, got out of my car, and was about to walk up the steps into the gym when up on the rooftop, I see one of my coaches, Jake, just kind of like sitting on the rooftop of the gym. And right as I look up, I see some kids behind me and they yell, hey, Jake, because they see him up there too. And one thing I talk about is I will admit in parkour, I have been on rooftops. And what's interesting about when you're up high is the only people who really notice you are little kids. Mm. And it's because they still see the world open-mindedly. They don't close their their vision. They don't have that tunnel vision where they got their head down staring at their phone or whatever. They are constantly looking all over for possibilities and things that interest them. And the cool thing about that story is I was just reminded of myself. I was like, cool, I still have that. Like, I will notice somebody on a roof. I'm not like, you know, all those other adults who have their head down and don't notice any of that. So.
Yeah, or their head in their phone. Yeah, you're right, because people do sort of start to see their world as made up of little lanes of allowed movement rather than as a topographical three-dimensional space that they can really make their own, right? So that exactly. kind of leads me to a question that I have now. I think, and I hope this comes out right, because I don't know if this is an offensive thing to say to somebody in your world, but I kind of see some parallels in the world of skateboarding that I see in parkour. But I was never interested in skateboarding because to me there's just nothing that was really interesting about riding on a piece of wood with four wheels. And I think it's cool, but it wasn't interesting to me. I see some similar attitudes and some similar perceptions in parkour, except parkour is interesting to me because it's just pure movement. But I'm curious if in the way that we see with skateboarding, it's like if you're it's illegal to do in a lot of places now. Is right. that happening with parkour? Is it similar where, like, you know, kids are going out and trying to do some parkour and the police are showing up or people are calling? Are we going to see signs posted up like we see now, like, no skateboarding here? I see that all the time now. Are right. we going to see similar signs posted up about parkour in the cities? Is that starting to happen or is it still pretty open and free?
Yeah, you know, I hope we never see that because that would be kind of like the death of human movement, you know? Like, what is parkour? If you put a no parkour sign, how can you actually define parkour and what you're allowed to do in this little courtyard, for example? Does that mean I can't crawl on my hands and feet? Does that mean I can't jump 2 inches off the ground? Like, what is parkour? How do you draw the line? And, you know, that'd be really sad to me if you did see that. Actually, I have seen, or I've heard of a couple signs, you know, they kind of go viral in the community if anyone finds a no parkour sign. But yeah, they are pretty rare at this point. But, you know, you do draw some good parallels to skateboarding. We do kind of hate the comparison that parkour is like skateboarding without a skateboard. You know, that's obviously a very, like, simplified, kind of dumbed down version.
I think skateboarding is like parkour with a board on your feet.
Right. there are some cool parallels between skateboarding and parkour. Obviously, we're both kind of using architecture in a novel way. We're kind of reclaiming the city, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, people are boxing us in these cities and sidewalks and railings, but we're kind of liberating ourselves, I guess, by using these things for things that weren't necessarily, they weren't designed for. But yeah, you know, skateboarding, I definitely have a lot of respect for it. With that being said, I hope I don't piss off any skateboarders when I'm about to say this, but I feel like you can get away with not being too physically fit as a skateboarder. I do see a huge amount of skill in skateboarding with all of the crazy footwork and whatnot. But I'm not going to lie, a lot of the skateboarders I've seen probably can't do that many pull-ups. They probably can't run that fast. In parkour, we can't get away with that kind of like rebel party animal sort of skateboarding mentality because what we do is only with our bodies. We don't have any wheels or anything to help propel ourselves. It's all completely done by our body. And so because of that, in parkour, you see people, they realize that they can't get away with partying and, you know, eating crappy. And so we tend to be more along the lines of like a gymnast. Like, we have to have some pretty intense physical training and good diets and, you know, just overall really healthy lifestyle is what kind of tends to go with parkour. So
yeah, I really like that. And I like the total body development attitude as well, because, you know, one thing, if you didn't piss off the skateboarders, I will now. So one of the things I noticed is, you know, people who skateboard a lot, they end up with a kind of a chronic distortion in their skeleton, unless they're perfectly balanced and ambidextrous in how they approach that sport. You know, you have one leg right. that pushes and one leg that balances. Or let's say for people who are cyclists, I've got a lot of friends who are cyclists, and I always am poking fun at them and saying, oh, so you like to exercise in the fetal position, you know, because, yeah. you know, most sports have some kind of sport-specific issue that arises. And what I like about parkour is that you're using your body in a apparently a total kind of holistic way. You feel that's true? I mean, it seems like you're climbing, you're pulling, you're jumping, you're vaulting, all these kind of movements. You're crawling, you're walking, you're running. So it's like the total body is being developed, and it's not. There's no specific physical movement pattern rut that people are falling into. Is that true?
Yeah, definitely. What you're saying reminds me of even professional football players, and specifically the cornerback position. So these are the guys who are covering the wide receivers and having to run really fast. And a lot of people consider them the most athletic people on the entire football field. However, they are constantly backpedaling, and they're constantly kind of like half crouched over. And what this does is they've actually done studies that show these guys have a lot more groin pulls and stuff because they have such tight hip flexors, because they're constantly, you know, hunched over and not really getting a full stretch there a lot of the time. So, yeah, I see a lot of problems with sports where they're like very repetitive or not they're missing some kind of element. You know, like most sports are going to miss, maybe they don't have any climbing element, or maybe they don't have a jumping element. And that's what I really love about parkour. I see parkour as a blend of, you know, dance, martial arts, rock climbing, track and field, gymnastics. You get a little bit of everything. And then because of that, it is very much a whole body experience, and you can't afford to have weaknesses. However, depending on the way you train, I have seen a lot of parkour people, you know, kind of avoid their weaknesses. Maybe they never climb because they have a weak upper body. And so you can get away with that if you train in a certain way. But one of my favorite ways to train parkour, and one of the other really cool things I think parkour brings to the table, is there's something very primal about, you know, imagine yourself in an emergency situation and having to get from A to B as fast as possible. And this is kind of like the parkour competition time trials sort of thing, which is a very young competition kind of route right now. But we put out a video like a couple months ago, and it just blew up. It went viral. It's probably our first viral video, got like a couple million views in just a few weeks. And it was just showing that, kind of trying to capture that essence of, you're about to run a course and you have to adapt on the fly. You might have an idea of what you're going to do, but you might trip, you might slip, you might fall, you might have to adjust and adapt and recover. And in these little moments where you're under pressure of the clock, or maybe you find yourself in an emergency situation, you will have to be well-rounded. You will find a weakness that is exposed. And that's what I really love about this time trial sort of training, is that you will find those weaknesses. You can't avoid some of these things. They will be brought to light, and you will be forced to work on those.
I love what you're talking about there. For me, I do a lot of training under stress, and I've also got some background in emergency medicine, and I do a lot of combatives training. And in that world, what we learn is that you have to train to function under that kind of stress and to adapt in those moments. Otherwise, when that really happens, people are usually, they freeze up. They're not that good at that. So I like that too, that you're training in such a way that creates a kind of neuroplasticity and a body adaptability as you encounter new obstacles all the time. I sort of noticed, like, when people get into these movement, like where they got a workout that they do week after week after week after week, and that they're never learning anything new. And I like this idea that this kind of movement keeps you really plastic, so that you're constantly changing, and your body has to stay adaptable, and your mind has to stay adaptable. The other thing is that it seems to me that this is just blowing up. Like, it's becoming so much more common. I assume that a lot of people who've gotten into more traditional sports would have chosen parkour if they had known about it or seen it or felt it was accessible to them. Like, because I think it's what a lot of people actually really want to do. How big is it getting? Where is it headed? What's next? And will it ever be in the Olympics?
Yeah, definitely. Actually, wow, I just had a ton of thoughts here. First off, I'll just backtrack real quickly and say that, you know, the whole competition aspect is a touchy subject in parkour. A lot of people think that in parkour it should only be a competition with yourself. However, I kind of like to compare it to what you were saying, like combatives or martial arts. If you never actually spar in martial arts, how do you know what actually works the best? And so it's kind of the same thing with parkour. If you never truly put these movements to a test under pressure and under time, then you won't really know what's the best. So that's what I'd say to some of those competition people who are against it. Additionally, yeah, like you said, it is blowing up, absolutely. And it's not just the people who got into other sports because they didn't know of parkour. It's also the people who just never fit into anywhere else. Like, mm-hmm. we do get a lot of those kind of awkward teenagers who are into, you know, video games and sci-fi and this and that. And all of a sudden they find parkour, they see it on the internet, and they're like, wait a second, you're telling me I can have, like, actual superhero powers?
Yeah, instead of watching it on TV or reading it in a comic book.
Yeah, and they can just go on YouTube and start, like, seeing some tutorials about how to, you know, climb up a wall really fast, or how to jump and roll and spread out the impact and, you know, take these surprising drops without any harm to their bodies. And it's a really cool thing for a lot of people who just never fit into the traditional team sports or never found that physical outlet anywhere else.
Yeah, that's really amazing. And then do you think, okay, so I asked about the Olympics because, you know, to me, the Olympics traditionally are this place where human movement potential is explored. And so now we have finally, and it's so weird how long it's taken for this thing to emerge, this idea of the human body in its purest form of movement. But here it is. Do you think we'll see it there?
Yeah, so I actually do know firsthand that there is quite a bit of talk behind the scenes about getting parkour into the Olympics. And at this point in parkour and free running, you know, competitions are still quite young and there haven't been a whole lot of them. Fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you see it, there has been one really big one. Unfortunately, it's sponsored by Red Bull, but it is a, it's a free running competition. So it's more about judged on creativity and difficulty and style and stuff. However, I do think that these parkour time trials sort of courses, where it's just like an obstacle course for time, there is that video that we put out show that there is something like inherently appealing to people. Like, it's fun to watch it. It's really cool to see these people just blaze through an environment as fast as possible. And I think that the parkour competitions may actually overthrow the free running competitions. And actually, specifically talking about the Olympics, there is talk about trying to get parkour into the 2020 Tokyo Olympics, and it would be like a parkour time trial sort of thing, not free running like style.
That would be incredible. Yeah, I've always liked to watch. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, however, it is unfortunately very difficult to kind of jump through all the hoops necessary to get it there. Like, there needs to be all of these national and international governing bodies, and it has to be recognized in so many countries and stuff before it can really be added to the Olympics. So 2020 Tokyo might be a stretch, but yeah, hopefully, you know, someday it does make it. I think it'd be really fun to watch.
Yeah, because I, you know, I've always liked to watch the gymnastics portion of the Olympics. I've always just, because I like to watch human movement, but again, I watch that because there isn't a free running component or there isn't a parkour component, because if there was, that's what I'd be watching. Okay, I'm kind of curious about, there seems like, equipment-wise, a very low barrier to entry, and that I think is so cool, because even, you know, even yoga now, it's like, it's so overwhelming to people. They're like, I want to do yoga. Okay, I got to get the yoga mat, I got to get the yoga clothes, and I got to go to the, and all the stuff that you think you need now. But parkour seems like still pretty pure, but the barrier to entry to me seems to be people are going like, are maybe thinking that it's something they can't do, or something that you'd have to be this really elite athlete to do, or maybe you have to be like the kind of skateboarder kid who's just willing to take huge risks. But I feel like after watching your TED talk, it's like, no, that's not at all what's going on here. Talk a little bit about people who can get involved. Can anybody get involved? How do you get started with something like this? And, you know, is it safe for people to do?
Yeah. First off, wow, that's a lot of different questions.
that's what I do, Ryan.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so let's see here. I was going to say I am a very minimalist person. I definitely subscribe to a lot of those, you know, minimalist philosophies. I lived in my car for a long time. I got rid of all of my stuff. I was living in a house and got sick of just having all this stuff and all this space. Lived in my car for like a year and a half. I think, you know, parkour is definitely very minimalist. Like you're saying, it doesn't require any equipment. You don't even need shoes, and you technically don't even need clothes. You just need to, like, walk out of your house or walk out of, you know, whatever, into the forest, into the city, and you can find something to move with. It can be a tree branch, it can be a bench, a rail, a stair set, whatever it may be. All you need to do is just walk out and have a little bit of a creative vision and find something to exercise with or find something to play with and move around with. And because of that, I think that this is something that is a very, very much an international phenomenon now, partly thanks to YouTube and social media. You know, you can go to any country in the world probably and find some people doing parkour. And these, a lot of times, could be people who have literally no money, no house. They just, you know, find a way to play around with their environment. And because of that, that's one thing I'd really love to see parkour become, is I've thought about starting like a nonprofit to teach parkour to people all over the world. Because, for example, one of my friends has a company who does that for lacrosse, but they go into, you know, like Zimbabwe in Africa and they teach kids lacrosse and they bring the equipment and the balls and the fields and they teach somebody how to be a referee and then they leave. After a year or two, do you think those kids are still going to be playing lacrosse?
Probably not. It's equipment heavy, right?
But if you went in there and taught people parkour and how to be safe and have progressions and how to see things in a different way, then that is something that could be really much, you know, handed down generation to generation, and, you know, giving people that creative outlet, that mental toughness outlet, physical as well. So, you know, it is something that absolutely anyone can do. We do deal with that stereotype of it being just for, you know, like 18-year-old athletic males who do double backflips and roof jumps on, you know, YouTube. But what people don't see is all of the practice that goes on behind the scenes. So even these spectacular stunts, I can guarantee you that, you know, you do have to have a smart progression. You do have to, you know, take your fears and keep them close to you as not just an enemy but a friend. Because the people who totally disregard their fear and take unnecessary risks, those are the ones who are kind of naturally selecting themselves. They're getting hurt, they're getting out of parkour, and they don't last.
Selecting themselves.
Yeah, you know, if you're going to stay in parkour for a couple of years or get to, you know, over 10 years of practice, you definitely have to have a lot of intelligence in your training. At times, it will be very humbling. You will be scared, and I think that's, it's just an amazing thing that everybody can feel that sense of fear, that sense of achievement. And, you know, it's something that anyone can take on. It doesn't matter if you're trying to learn how to do a backflip or if you're trying to learn how to step over a 2.5-foot rail. Whatever movement level you are at, you need to progress that. And by doing parkour, you can progress and build upon your own capability. And that's really what it's all about.
What kind of range of people do you see at your school at Apex Movement?
Yeah, so we've been open for a long time now. We have 5 gyms in Colorado and California, and I've been teaching since about 2006. So in those 8 or 9 years of teaching, I've taught thousands, if not tens of thousands, people at this point. We have a lot of classes for ages 5 to 12. Those are our youth classes. We even do have some like taught classes for ages like 3 and 4. I have teens doing it. I have adults doing it. I think the oldest student I've ever had was like 74 or something, and he completed our entire 10-class intro curriculum, which,
oh, amazing.
You know, takes people through, first they do crawling, and then they do landing and falling, balancing and jumping, vaulting, wall running, brachiating and climbing, and a little bit of flipping and twisting at the end. So if a 74-year-old can do it, you know, so can you. I've seen, there's people with cerebral palsy who do parkour. There's a guy from Mexico with one leg. He got his leg torn off in a train accident or something, and he still trains parkour.
Wow.
And there's girls in Iran who are, you know, oppressed and dealing with a lot of gender issues, and they do parkour. Like, you can read about all this stuff on the internet, and BBC has covered it. It's on YouTube. There's amazing people who are taking their own adversity in life and kind of using parkour as, you know, that metaphor. Like, it's a very easy metaphor for people to understand in parkour. You overcome obstacles physically, and you overcome obstacles in life. And because of that, I think, you know, it has that inherent attractiveness to a lot of people.
Yeah, you know, I have an obstacle course in my backyard, and I've made some videos on this idea of overcoming obstacles as a metaphor. And
I've seen those. They're awesome.
Oh, cool. Thank you. Well, what's interesting about that is as I've sat with that idea, more and more I realize it's not even really a metaphor. It's just actually what is, right? It's like, it's, I don't know if that comes out right, but it's, to me, it's the same thing. Like, training yourself to overcome obstacles not even really a metaphor. It's like you really do just start getting good at overcoming obstacles. And I think you said an important piece there before, which is about progression, because it's not like you just go and jump off a roof, right? You build into things like piece right. by piece by piece by piece and advance and sophisticate your movement. I think that when I see, and I really like watching parkour videos, really high-end parkour videos do it for me. So I want to be clear up front when I say this, that they give the impression often, the way that they're edited and the way that they're put together, it often looks like as if this person has just stepped into an environment they've never seen and they're just tearing full speed through this, and yeah. you see these flawless runs. And I'm assuming that that's part of why people think, oh my gosh, this is something I couldn't do. How, like... Can you talk a little bit about how edited that stuff is?
Yeah.
And I would assume for every good run we see, there's 50 takes of people falling on their faces and
oh,
missing
yeah.
the mark, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So everything you see on YouTube, not everything, but a lot of the best, like most highly produced videos, of course, there was tons of choreography and planning and repetition, and not to mention years of physical training and mental training that goes on to be able to eventually be in that position to do it. And that's what a lot of people, you know, don't see. However, I'll use we have a video called Apex Movement 2012 that is on YouTube, and it has like 500,000 views or something. However, we also put a kind of like a sister video out with that one, and it's the Bales Reel. So it was like this video that we all worked on as a team together for, you know, 6 or 12 months. And we accumulated a lot of amazing bales and falls and funny stuff, you know, behind the scenes. And that video has way more views, actually.
Cool.
Yeah, it overtook the other one. And so
when you say bales, you mean people bailing out of something they're about to do?
Right. Yeah, bales, fails, falls, all that kind
Got
of
it.
Stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's, I think people really do like to see that as well, because it makes people seem human.
Uh-huh.
It's like, oh, hey, I fall on my face when I slip on the sidewalk, too. Like, I like that guy. He got up. I can see him getting up, and he's trying over and over again, and I really appreciate that. I should do that too. And I think, you know, that's a really important thing to recognize, that we do mess up, we do fall, try to have those progressions. Like a lot of the crazy stuff you see as well, we build up to with many different progressions. We try to break it down, you know, analytically. We try to have the mindset of like a good gymnastics coach or, you know, coaches across the board. We want to bring a good curriculum, good coaching methods to the table, so that actually why the original reason I started teaching parkour was because when I started in, you know, 2004, I was the only one in all of Colorado I could find who did parkour. So I was out on my own, you know, watching videos online and going outside and trying it. And I actually thought that in order to practice my roll off of like a high object, I had to climb onto the very tip top of the playground, which is like 12 feet high, and jump off that and practice my roll. You know, nowadays, I'm going to teach somebody how to do that on the ground level, because
just starting on their hands and knees, I assume.
yeah, that's a very dangerous thing to just get up on something tall and think that you can learn by trial and error. We definitely give a lot of progressions so that people can do it safely, no matter what their fitness or skill level.
That's awesome. And so, I kind of want to talk a little bit about how people can get started. But first, I want to ask if you've ever, does anyone ever come to you and tell you a story? Have you heard any stories of people who are like, you know what, parkour saved my life? Or like, parkour, like, I would have fallen and broken my leg, but because of my parkour, like, I was able to roll out of this scenario. Or do you see people, because to me, a lot of these movements, in particular rolls and things like that, have really, I think of it as injury proofing a lot of the time, like life proofing myself. You see that a lot?
Yeah, actually, one of the huge ideas that we like to promote kind of through parkour is this idea of falling. So learning how to fall. That's not necessarily tied just to parkour. It is useful whether you are a 65-year-old who needs to not break a hip if you ever fall down. It's useful if you are a snowboarder, a mountain biker, if you're on a longboard and you hit a patch of gravel, if you're slipping on ice. Like, these things happen to everyone. Falling is going to happen to everyone. And it's important to know the basics of, you know, like if you're falling backwards, don't stick your arm out behind you because you'll break your elbow or your wrist or something. If you're falling forwards, you should try to roll. Like I used to ride my bike all around campus and I tried to hop a curb once and I remember just totally clipping my tire on it and it launched me over my handlebars and I just did like a 6 to 8 foot dive roll onto a patch of grass and just stood up brushed my shoulders off, was totally fine, and kept on my way. But, you know, so many people, they separate their shoulder or these little injuries that happen when they fall. And, yeah, I've heard of some of my other friends who, you know, have actually been hit by trains and hit by cars. And because of their parkour instincts, their ability to kind of just, like, instead of fighting the momentum, letting the momentum take you and being able to roll and fall in any direction has definitely saved people from a lot of injury and probably even saved a few lives.
Yeah, this is, I think, one of the really, I mean, I feel like this is, we're at this junction right now in this conversation where we're talking about, I think, one of the most useful aspects here, because I think about, like, you know, if we had a gerbil in a cage forever and we were going to set it free to go live in the wild, or if we were going to set a dog free that had lived in a Manhattan townhouse its whole life and it was going to get to go live in the forest, like, it would be wise to train it a little bit and build it up before we just put it out into that environment. And I say that because obviously most humans have been raised in a very artificial environment, and they've moved their whole life in an artificial environment, and they've moved in artificial ways. And now it's like, okay, so if we're going to start to, you know, this idea that I'm into of like rewild ourselves, and we're going to start to go explore the world a little bit more, it would be good to be able to move in a way that we didn't get injured. And I noticed that the more adventurous we become, obviously the more risk that we run and the more potential for injury. And I got to say that rolling in particular, rolling and falling and having a good relationship with the ground has saved me so many times.
Definitely.
Especially out hiking, climbing, and playing, right? You must see that all the time where it's like, and I'll see other people, like you said, get injured, and it's sometimes it's so obvious because they just eat that impact and they don't know how to disperse it or whatever. So it seems like this is a great way for people to prepare their bodies for adventures outside their homes, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We actually teach a lot of coaching certifications for parkour. We teach workshops and stuff. And me and my other head coach and partner, Amos Rendau, we kind of go around and we've selected a couple of these sort of niche movements within parkour that we feel are probably the most important for anyone to know, no matter if you do parkour or not. If you were to ever get in an emergency situation, there's two things that you should probably be good at. And these are two things that parkour can help you with. First and foremost, being able to get down safely. So this includes your landings, your rolls, your falling ability, all of this stuff. How to get down safely. And then the other one is how to get up quickly. So if you were being chased or something, being able to climb up, get out of harm's way, you know, evade a mugger, evade a mountain lion, who knows what it may be. Being able to get up quickly is also important. And these are two skills that a lot of people kind of gloss over when they start parkour. They're like, rolling and climb ups are dumb. Like, I don't want to do those. Those are hard. They're boring. I want to do flips. And so they get distracted by, you know, the flashy stuff, and they forget about these two things that are important life skills that should be done by anyone. And so getting down safely, getting up quickly are two of the things that we try to put a lot of emphasis on.
That's awesome. And I'm curious, as you say that, I'm kind of wondering a little bit about your own movement practice. And I think a piece here that I want to hit on too is, you know, for instance, as a teacher of the rewilding idea, you know, I spend so much time teaching about it, and I spend so much time writing about it and doing work around it, that I often have to really like make space in my life to like do my own practices. And I'm curious, as a business person, it sounds like you're busy with a lot of projects and you've got all these schools that you're managing. And, you know, how's it been for you? How is your movement practice today? How's that been for you over the years as you've gotten busier and busier finding the space and time? And, you know, what do you see as kind of what would be your optimum kind of movement, I guess, amount of time in your week that you'd spend doing movement if you really could?
Yeah, it definitely is difficult sometimes if you're doing a lot of coaching and managing businesses and all that kind of stuff. I will be the first to admit that I have definitely neglected my training for different portions of my, you know, 11-year parkour career. In fact, I wouldn't really even say that I've done parkour for 11 years, because I have had injuries. I have had downtimes in my training where I can't really count that as, you know, actual practice. So yeah, it's difficult sometimes, but, you know, I guess looking at injuries, for example, I heard Louis West say, you know, never waste an injury. And I definitely have the same mindset. If the only wild card there is like, if you hurt your back or your neck, then yeah, you might have to do total rest. But if you just, you know, sprain an ankle or hurt a wrist or a shoulder or something, there's always something you can do. Like if I sprain my ankle, I can keep working on handstands and muscle ups and upper body stuff. If I hurt my wrist or my hand, I can still do a lot of jumping and running sort of stuff. So I think my training definitely goes in phases. I tend to be kind of an obsessive personality, and you know, I get really latched on to like a specific idea or a specific movement or a specific goal, and I like to work very hard toward that goal for, you know, 6 or 12 weeks at a time, and then maybe I achieve it, and then I figure out what is my next goal. I think a lot of people have not enough goals or no goals in general, or they have too many goals. And goals are definitely a very important piece of that motivational sort of aspect. Why are you training? Why are you doing this? What are you working toward? And if you have good goals, I think that's a really helpful thing.
Yeah, and taking that disciplined approach, I think, is important too. Because it's interesting, actually, because there's such a balance between having discipline and then being somebody who can go with the flow, right? And I know people who are so disciplined that the rigidity that they have doesn't allow life in. And I know people who go with the flow so much, they can't really ever get anywhere in life because their lives are too unstructured. And I imagine in your training, you're needing to have a bit of both of this, right? Because if you're going to achieve some of these goals, there's got to be structure, but you got to flow in that structure too, right?
Definitely. This reminds me of, let's analyze a couple of our parkour, like professional athletes, to kind of illustrate this idea. There are the professional athletes who may compete in this free running kind of style competition, and they're all about, you know, choreographing every little piece and repeating it many, many times, maybe to the point where they're overtraining, they might hurt themselves, but they just have this mindset of like, I have to be perfect. This is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to drill it. Like, I'm going to do it over and over. And this is kind of like one end of the spectrum. They're the people who are more of the choreography athletes, I guess. And then you have the other end of the spectrum, which is the improvisational athlete. So these are, it'd be more kind of like a b-boy battle, like where you're kind of in the heat of the moment and, you know, it's the last round and you both have already thrown down all your tricks and you've got to pull something, you know, just random and new and spontaneous out of the bag. And there's people who really excel at that spontaneous kind of improv sort of style as well. And you know, that's very valuable for the hobbyist as well, because you know, a lot of your training shouldn't be, you know, super rigid and strict. Like, you should just go out to the park with your kids and like play around and have some fun, but you should also be on the other end of the spectrum and have that rigidity or that goal or that something that you're working toward and staying disciplined to. So yes, I completely agree that both of those things are important.
Yeah, you got to have that balance. And then also, I imagine a big part of it, you know, is developing your own, finding your unique style, right? I imagine everybody, because I would think that in your classes, you're having to teach, you know, this is how the movement template looks. But over time, does each athlete really develop their own unique style?
Yeah, so we do have a pretty successful professional team with Apex Movement, and we have a lot of students and people coming up through the ranks now who are getting amazingly talented as well. And they ask me, how do I get on the pro team? Because, you know, they make it a goal that maybe they want to do parkour professionally. They want to do performances or be a stuntman or whatever that may be. And they ask me, how do I get on the Apex Movement pro team? And what I like to tell them is, here's what we stand for at Apex Movement. We are a very well-rounded school. We produce very well-rounded athletes. So if you have any holes in your fundamentals, if it's maybe like you suck at climb-ups or you can't do rolls very well or you've neglected your vaulting or whatever it may be, I'm going to tell you to fill in the gaps and become very well-rounded through your fundamentals. And you can think of this as kind of like your prerequisites, your general education in college. And then once you've fulfilled those general requirements, then you get to find your minor or your major or your specialty. And that's where I want you to bring something new to the table, something creative, something that progresses the sport in a unique way, and something that, you know, makes your own style your own. Like, I don't want to see you copying the same stuff that everyone else does. There should be that room for, you know, bringing something original and new to the table. And if we don't do that, like if humanity doesn't do that as a whole, then we stagnate, you know, like, whether it's, you know, space travel or parkour or whatever it may be, we need those original thinkers that are also going to bring something new to the table and progress, you know, humanity as a whole. So that's what I like to tell people.
Tell us a little bit about getting involved with Apex. And, you know, I mean, it seems like it's really beautiful to me that there are parkour schools opening up. I love that idea. I mean, I get so excited to think about people doing this. I mean, it's just, it's beautiful to me. You've got all these.
I was going to say earlier when you mentioned school, I love that you're saying parkour school, because when people say parkour gym, I kind of like cringe a little bit. Like, I let it slide, but I don't think gyms should be a place where you just go to like exercise. I think gyms need to be a place where you go to learn. Like, it's where you go to learn new skills and learn mindsets and things like this that you can learn through parkour, because parkour can be done anywhere. You don't have to go to the gym to exercise. You should go to the gym to learn stuff. And in that sense, I think of Apex Movement as a school and not a gym. So I'm happy that you said that.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, that's great. And I love that there seems to be an emerging consciousness of, hey, it's not about the workout. It's about a lifestyle of movement. It's not about, and I think the same thing, like whenever I work with trainers in different fields, what I've come to understand is that you go to the trainer to learn how to train yourself, not to get your workout in, you know?
Right.
Like, yeah, you're going to get a workout in the training session, but they're showing you what to take home, what to take out, what to go out and do.
That's
you know
true.
What I mean?
If they're good.
If they're good, exactly right. Yeah, exactly. If they're really a trainer. But tell us about your school, how people can get started going, and what towns are your schools in, so that people listening can you know, dial in if that's something close to them.
Yeah, definitely. We are currently based in Boulder, Colorado. We also have a gym in Denver and Fort Collins and Colorado Springs in Colorado.
Oh.
We also have one gym in Concord, California, which is kind of like East Bay area. And we're trying to open up our next one in San Diego. And we are working with licensing, so we will be licensing the name out and working with, you know, the right individuals to open up more parkour gyms around the country. So if we are near to you guys, then I definitely recommend coming in for like an intro class. If you aren't anywhere around us, maybe you just, you know, run a quick Google search. There are many other parkour gyms around the country. There are little programs that teach out of other gyms as well. There might just be, you know, some locals near you that you can find and meet up with at the park and, you know, learn a little bit there. Also, there's a lot of great tutorials on YouTube as far as learning parkour on your own. I will also caution you that there are a lot of terrible tutorials on
I bet.
So you kind of have to take it with a grain of salt and analyze it critically. That's what we're trying to use. Parkour EDU is a new company that we're going to be doing video courses and stuff online, so that people can, you know, certainly rely on the fact that we're going to put out quality stuff and they can trust it and they can use that to learn safely.
I like that idea. Tell us about that. Tell us about Parkour EDU. That's a really cool idea.
Yeah, so we got a little bit lucky, but we won a $100,000 digital marketing grant through a new marketing company that opened up in Boulder. So
wow.
We were thinking about starting this new thing, and then we won that. And so they've been helping us develop the website. And so there's going to be lots of great like online courses that incorporate photo and video and Google Docs and PDFs and things that can help you train on your own. So even if you live in India or Australia or Brazil, you can experience the methods that are tried and tested through Apex Movement. And you can experience that same curriculum outside on your own if you go out to a park or something.
That's great, man. And then when will that be live?
You know, it has been kind of frustrating and difficult to get off the ground. It's a big project, and development has been going slow, but hopefully we can get something out this summer.
Oh, that's fantastic. And then as far as going to one of the Apex schools, I'm sure it's this way, but I just want to be clear for people listening. If somebody goes to that, there's obviously like beginners classes and beginners programs, right? So that people can really start from the ground up. I just want people to know they don't have to be intimidated.
Definitely.
Kind of approaching this.
Yes, absolutely. This is the curriculum that we've dedicated, you know, 8 or 9 years to, and it's been tried and tested on thousands of people, and we're constantly revising it and trying to find the best progressions, the best methods, the best ways to scale things up and down, so that all levels, it doesn't matter how old you are, it doesn't matter if you're overweight or, you know, whatever, like anyone can do it. So don't be afraid to try it. Our coaches are going to keep you safe. We're not going to ask you to do something that you're not ready for, but we will challenge you to build upon whatever level you're currently at.
Yeah, that's awesome. Hey, Ryan, I wanted to ask you about something else because as we're talking, I'm just kind of sitting here thinking it's really cool that you've made your life, you've made your work about this thing that you love. And I'm just curious what you have to say about that because it seems to me there, I would guess that there were people who thought you couldn't make a living, you couldn't make a life out of doing parkour. And I know in my own work, you know, there's been a lot of people over the years who meant really well but suggested that I not go after my dream. And here I am now, this is my life, and it's wonderful for me, and I'm so happy with what I get to do. And I'm just curious for you what you think about that, what you might have to say about that, and about people really going after the thing that's in their heart.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I would have it no other way. I've absolutely struggled a lot, especially at the start, in order to start this and pursue this dream. But it's definitely worth it. I'd have it no other way. I mean, I think that the world would be a much better place if more people had the courage and the determination, the desire to find what it is that really like makes them excited and to pursue that. Because I think if you do find your passion and you do have a lot of hard work and determination, it doesn't matter what you're trying to do, you will find a way to be successful. And, you know, I went to business school at CU Boulder, and I walked through school like seeing so many people who had no idea what they were doing there. And they thought in order to be successful, it was, you know, their parents' dream. Like, I want to be a lawyer or an accountant or something for my parents because that's what's successful. That's what I think is successful. But then I would be like, are you sure? Like, do you really enjoy accounting? Like, you really want to do that the rest of your life? And I actually changed, I made a few people change their major just by having talks about this kind of topic with them. And I think, again, it's really important that, you know, really do find something that makes you excited. I feel really lucky that I found something that made me feel like that at a very young age. And so I was able to pursue it. I feel like maybe some people don't find that until their mid-20s or their 30s or even 40s and beyond. But when you do find that, I would recommend, you know, like go for it 100% because if you're really excited and passionate about it, you can definitely make that your career as well.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Okay, kind of that as you say that, I'm thinking about a couple of things. You talked about how we stagnate if people aren't coming with fresh ideas, new ideas. And one of the things is that when people follow their passion, they usually come up with new ideas and new ways of doing things, which is awesome. Another piece that comes up for me is that this idea, okay, it's always hard in the beginning, you know? It's always tough in the beginning. Like, we see successful people in these fields that we really respect, and it's like watching the parkour video. We don't realize how many falls on the face happened and how many times they slipped and how many times they had to bail. And I know in my own career, you know, in the beginning, there was a lot of really tough stuff before I got it really off the ground. But that mindset you've been talking about, a mindset of overcoming obstacles, gets you through that, you know, because, and it's like there, of course there's going to be obstacles in the beginning. We need that to grow. And so I love that the parkour idea is this mindset of overcoming obstacles, because it seems to me that's one of the most important things a person could do to train themselves for a life on planet Earth, right?
Absolutely. And this kind of makes me think about, I like to follow all these articles that are coming out now, like even the New York Times and stuff. It's analyzing like modern playgrounds and kind of like parenting culture and how these playgrounds that are extra safe and sanitized and are meant to be designed in a way where nobody gets hurt and nobody ever has any adversity, they're actually they're producing more injuries because the kids are bored and they're using them in ways that they weren't meant to be used, and so they're actually getting hurt even more than if they had some of this kind of old school equipment, you know, like the teeter-totters and merry-go-rounds and tall jungle gyms and things like that. And then the parenting culture of, you know, like really babying your kid and not letting them climb up for themselves and helping them with everything and, you know, patting them on the head and kissing them and like feeling sorry for them when they get a little tiny scrape on their elbow. It's been shown that some of these things are actually like severely inhibiting kids' ability to attack problems later on in life with the tenacity and determination that they need to be successful. And that's just, you know, I think it all kind of ties into parkour and what I'm doing. So hopefully I can kind of, you know, help this problem in my own little way and produce some kids and even adults that are, you know, a little more confident in themselves and able to handle problems.
Yeah, I love it. But yeah, obstacles in your way are so, they're just so important. Okay, so where do people find you? Where do we send people? How do you like people to get in touch?
You know, I'm on Twitter and Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, all these places. I have a series called Demon Drills on YouTube, lots of different videos and tutorials to help you get started on your own. If you just have yourself and a friend in park, maybe, you can go out and look at these videos and try some stuff. You can hit me up on Twitter or Instagram. It's at Ryan Demon Ford. Demon is kind of like my old school parkour nickname. And or you can email me, ryan@apexmovement.com. You can find me at my gym in Boulder a lot of the time. Or, you know, just I'm around. I travel quite a bit too, so just keep an eye out, I guess.
Oh, fantastic. Do you do workshops and things like that on the road?
Yeah, we do quite a few workshops and coaching certifications and stuff like that. And that's actually kind of more through Parkour EDU. So when Parkour EDU launches, you'll be able to keep up with that schedule and stuff like that as well.
Beautiful. Hey, Ryan, thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I really enjoyed it. And I'm looking forward to seeing more stuff from you. And I want to see you do some more parkour videos. Or
yeah, I'm coming. I think I'm coming out to train with you, man. Hey, everybody, you've been listening to Ryan Ford on the Rewild Yourself podcast. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week with more awesome content. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to the show. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe to the show on iTunes. And if you would, leave a rating and a review. That's really going to help us get this message out to more people. And it's going to help us know what you really like and what you don't like, and help us really tailor this show to your needs and to what you want to hear. Please stay connected with me at danielvitalis.com and sign up for my newsletter and my magazine, Rewild Yourself. And you can subscribe to both of those right there on danielvitalis.com. Got lots of really great shows lined up, and I'm going to keep bringing you more great information. And until then, keep rewilding yourself. Show you.